Hello, fellow watch lovers, nerds, enthusiasts, or however you identify. You're listening to 40 and 20, the Watch Clicker podcast with your hosts, Andrew and my good friend Everett. Here, we talk about watches, food, drinks, life, and other things we like. Everett, how are you?
Just
busy.
Just doing my thing. No, I'm good, man. I went to the Oregon Knife Show this weekend, which was cool.
That was a really interesting lineup. I didn't go, but I looked at the booths that were the vendors going to be on scene, and that was an interesting lineup.
Yeah, you know, there's a bunch of, like, there's SHOT Show and Blade Show, and there's several of these, like, national products. This is more of a homegrown, a smaller show. So amongst the major knife companies, QSP was there, and Spyderco were there.
Kershaw was there too, weren't they?
Kershaw wasn't there. So, for those of you who don't know, Oregon's sort of a hotbed of knives in the country. Knives. And what's that?
Knives.
In
the plural.
Benchmade is here. Kershaw is here.
Gerber is here.
Meaning zero tolerance is... Kershaw meaning zero tolerance is also here. Gerber, CRKT, Leatherman. So, as well as numerous, like, smaller, much, much smaller maker companies. Anyway, Oregon's a big deal. None of those companies were there. None of them at all. Which I was like, that's interesting.
I thought it was weird, too.
It made me think maybe there was a political, like U.S. politics, but maybe some sort of, like...
They don't want the big brands there.
Or there had been something that... Anyway, long story short, I went. It was really fun. A lot of sort of private collectors with really interesting collections. Older guys, so a lot of, like, traditional knife collections. Great Eastern Cutlery, case, that sort of thing. Anyway, it was a lot of fun.
A lot of buck, I imagine, too.
There was quite a few buck knives. Yes, you're right about that. Also, buck was not at the show. But yeah, got some stuff. It was fun. It was my first knife show, so that was fun. It was cool. You'd go by a table and you'd be like, oh, this looks interesting. And then you'd be like, nope, this is all crap. Or then you'd go by a table and there'd be like six things and they'd all just be heaters, you know? So yeah, it was fun. But yeah, that's about the only thing new for me. Andrew, how are you?
I am good. I'm worn out. This weekend was not a relaxing weekend. On Friday, on Friday is when my weekend sort of began. I had to drive to Portland and back for a chess tournament, and that was 8 hours in the car. And for those of you familiar with the 100-mile trek between Eugene and North Portland, it should be about 5 hours.
Back and forth.
Yeah. So it was 8. That made for a really long day. And at the same time, Sam flew out of Portland International Airport into California. So I spent 8 hours in the car on Friday to watch one chess match and then be a solo parent all weekend, which was taxing because on Sunday, Mark had his first lacrosse game, which I was coaching. And fortunately, my dad came down to wrangle our younger son while I coached a pile of third graders who were...
Being third graders?
Being third graders. I think some Yotes just ran through our neighborhood.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, those were big shadows that were not in the road. and they decided to name their team the Coyotes. So,
oh, cool.
Yeah.
Quite
apropos given what just occurred in our hood. It was a really not refreshing weekend. I was very much looking forward to going back to work on Monday and being left alone. And now here we are Wednesday, and I am refreshed for my weekend and very much looking forward to the next one.
Well, good. Well, good. In any event, we're not here to talk about knife shows or coyotes or even lacrosse playing coyotes. We're here to talk about watches, and we could spend. So this is the first week after, you know, the majority of the Watches and Wonders releases. So a little bit of a slower week, which means a couple things. I think one, it means we get to take a step back and kind of talk about some of the Watches and Wonders stuff that has developed over the week, or at least for me had kind of, you know, the week's worth of stewing.
Made its way to the top.
Yeah, just provided some clarity on some things. And also we're going to talk about some new watches that did come out or were announced this week, which I think some of these are pretty fun.
There's some hot fire still on the tail of Watches and Wonders.
Yes, certainly some smoldering embers at the very least.
Yeah. Can I start?
I'd like it if you did.
Okay. I want to start with an interesting Zenith release. The Defy Extreme Diver. And this is interesting. So this is not, it looks like Zenith, but it's new. Hmm. It's new and refreshed. This is a 600 meter dive watch with an helium escape valve. And here's what I really like. 42.5 on this thing. And that's what you want. You want a beefy, but not monstrosity diver. Bummer is that it's 15.5 thick. It has the El Primero 3620 SC high frequency movement, 36,000 with a 60 hour power reserve. Here's what I don't like. I don't like the case sides. They have these like screwed in crown guards that just, the rest of it, the top down is great, but the screwed on crown guards are a big miss for me. I dig this colorway. It's kind of like a matrixy, not a sunburst. It's got little bursts of color throughout the dial in a pattern. We've got a black dial with an orange rehout, a blue dial with an orange, a interesting bezel where it's incorporating that. How many sides is that? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Oh, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13.
You know, it's pretty standard. 13-sided bezel.
But I don't know what that shape is called.
Yeah.
I don't even know if I counted it right. Great bracelet on this thing. And this thing is money. This is, barring the crown guards, I love this new kind of chapter for Zenith to be introducing a no bullshit deep diver. $11,300 for these. Kind of right where you'd expect it coming from Zenith. This is a good release. That integration of the bezel is cool. Like it's depressed. So you have like a crown inside of the bezel. Or not a crown, like stepped bezel. What would you call that?
I don't know. It's got a multiple piece bezel with, I think that additional piece is there to sort of protect the crystal and keep the chassis a little thinner.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I actually don't, I don't quite understand this watch. I don't think it's necessarily ugly. It's definitely not a handsome watch.
Oh, it's titanium too.
The whole thing's in titanium. I just don't know. I don't know how Zenith has. You said the price is about right, and actually,
that's where I'd expect it to be for an all titanium in house movement.
I don't know. I mean, I think with the competition that this watch has, say from Rolex or Omega or you know, even perhaps Tudor, although that's not a completely fair comparison. I mean, this thing is more expensive than anything in the same sort of category coming from those companies. I mean, obviously it's a big 600 or, you know, meter watch, but it just seems like it's positioned too expensively. Just from a marketing standpoint,
it is maybe a little bit of a weird drop, but I'm down with it. I like, it's not going to be for me, but I like this release from, it's different. It's new. It still feels like Zenith, but it's new and hot.
Yeah. You know, far be it for me to say what Zenith should or shouldn't do. I do think I was kind of shocked to see basically a $12,000 Zenith. You know, it's got some cool shit. The rotor is, it's got like the oscillator has like a weight on one side, but the whole thing's shaped like a star that's kind of centered. It's pretty trick. You know, I don't know.
I'm good with it. It's not a for me watch, but I like this release. I like this introduction into their catalog. It's not going to be limited edition. It's available right now.
How much is a Chronomaster Sport new?
Ooh, I don't know.
I want to say a Chronomaster Sport is like 11,000 new.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
And that is sort of, for me, that's like really Zenith's flagship. It's a more handsome watch.
Not much.
It's a watch that's got a lot more going on for it in terms of movement. No, this watch has a fantastic movement, but to bring this watch in positioned above your flagship, I don't know. I think it's kind of weird.
I think it's an interesting, barring the crown guards. I hate the crown guards.
And like I said, I a watch is worth what a watch is worth. I just think from a marketing standpoint, it's going to be a tough pill to swallow for a consumer.
Maybe, especially on a double pass nylon. They'd be a thick bitch. But what you got?
I am going to talk about Bremont. I'm going to talk about Bremont, the English watch company. English both in terms of its provenance and in terms of its former owners. Bremont, I think, is sort of like one of those companies that is successful notwithstanding the fact that their watches are just sort of like kind of outside looking in for a lot of people. They're cooler than like perhaps Raymond Weil or something, but anyway, Bremont has a weird place, I think, in the world of watches. Famously kind of sold out a few years back and brought in a new CEO, David Serrato, I don't know, formerly of Tudor, and they brought this fella in. And this year, or this last week, I would say Bremont did a bit of a reintroduction to the world, perhaps a repositioning or a brand re-identification, releasing a couple watches. Well, releasing a new watch and then releasing a full new line of watches, and touting it as an evolution. I'm putting my finger quotes, evolution from the world of aviation to a new brand architecture embodying land, sea, and air. Like, oh, okay, cool, Bremont. Yeah. I think what happens in these situations, you know, a hedge fund comes in, purchases some or all of a company, they inject it with money, they bring in some proven, some known quantity, players, they say, do your thing, make something happen. There's ideas that get pitched and they get workshopped. And, you know, here we are. And sometimes that's a real successful thing. And sometimes it's not. And you don't always know right away, right? The reaction to these new watches. So they've got a new series called the Terra Nova series, which appears to be a wholly new series for Bremont.
Which means Earth don't go.
It's a four watch series. And then there's also a, oh gosh, I don't know what you'd call it, that they're saying a redesigned Supermarine, but it's really like kind of a new watch, Supermarine 300 meters. So I'm going to steal heavily from an article written by our good friend Mike Razak on a blog to watch.
Rat Check. Yeah.
For this piece, Mike wrote a fantastic article, way better than anything he ever wrote for Watch Clicker, which is really disappointing. But
yeah,
Mike wrote a really, really
not as good as what he's done for Hodinkee, though.
a really good article about this, which is fairly critical, I think, of several things, and also takes a look at these new watches. The Terra Nova series, for what it's worth, the Terra Nova series winds up being four watches. One of those is a chronograph. One of them sort of a navigation watch with a compass bezel. You've got like a tourney bezel chronograph, and these two sort of field watches, a date field watch and a no date field watch. They've all got kind of like chopped tonneau cases.
Mm-hmm.
And most importantly, or perhaps maybe notably, there's a new font and logo. The logo being a compass, the font being generic, I think is a kind way to say it.
At best.
Yeah.
Boring, I think, is better.
Yeah. Well, maybe bad is a possibility here. I don't like the logo. You know, these things are subjective. I think this logo is kind of butt. But, I actually don't hate this watch. I think this watch is attractive. The Terra Nova, I said this watch, these four watches are attractive.
Them watches.
The chronograph's got some real Fotina thing going on, as does I think actually all the brown ones do, but they're using block loom. The dials are interesting. There's a power reserve on the compass watch. The bracelets are interesting. I've never seen anything like this from Bremont. I'm gonna say it every way possible.
I really hate the execution of the power reserve on the compass watch.
Oh, whatever.
I don't like power reserves anyway, but having Terra Nova London as the
wrapped around it,
like the wrapping text around it, put it at the 6 o'clock in the minute track, everyone else.
Another thing Mike brings up is in his article, all four of these say London on the dials. They're Bremont's not in London, nor do I think these are made in London. Kind of an interesting choice. I don't hate this release or these releases. Similarly with the Supermarine 300, also with the new font, new logo, I don't hate it. I actually like this. I like this watch. Mike's big criticism of this is that it really abandons all vestiges of the prior Supermarine, and I don't think that's unfair. It's not a complete abandonment, but it's a pretty big departure. The bracelet on the Supermarine, though, is like, ew. I don't like this bracelet at all. I don't like the end link. I don't like the bracelet. But the watch itself, I think, looks pretty terrific.
It's a really curious end link.
Yeah, I mean, just look at the picture. So we're going to post Mike's article because he spoke about this more eloquently than I think either one of us could. But I think this is watch news. You know, we talk about releases, not really news. This is watch news that I think is valuable, but we're not really journalists. So we're going to post a link to someone who's talked about this meaningfully, and
it's a reimagining of the Braemont brand.
Yeah, I think that's what this is. This is
the phoenix from the ashes, though they weren't really ashes. This is an interesting pivot.
I actually think it might be kind of the opposite of that phenomenon, right? I think this might be the hedge fund coming in and, you know, perhaps, I don't want to call it yet killing a brand, but you see these kind of moves when, I think it's too early to say Braemont jumped the shark, but I don't think it's too early to have some concerns.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Next up for me, a brand we don't talk about all that often, Patek Philippe, has done an interesting thing. And I have questions. They have standardized all of their watches to a 30-meter water resistance rating.
Yeah.
Why? We go from what were previously, by and large, spec'd sport watches that cost a bucket load of money. And now they're getting rated at 30 meters, which are like shower watches, maybe. I wouldn't shower in a 30-meter watch just because I don't want to. I wouldn't shower in this watch anyway. I'd keep it like in a dehumidifier zone. This is a interesting choice. There's not really anything more to say than that. Why? Why are we taking 120 meter water resistant watches, re-rating them at 30 to match across the board? Are they actually reducing water resistance, or are they just trying to standardize down to their lowest common denominator? Why are we taking this baller sport watch and taking away one of its most important components? Why? And I say we. I wasn't a part of this decision.
They didn't ask you.
They did not, because really 120 is just extra gravy. Just leave it at 110, man. Standardize at 110.
Did you grumble about it at the board meeting?
I did, and they basically said, hey, you weren't invited. You should go. I was like,
security's on the way up.
I was like, yeah, I'll be fast. Bet you can't catch me. And they didn't. And now I am here still grumbling. Why? That doesn't make any sense. When we're seeing beefier and beefier, like watches companies tending towards the watches of, you know, 5 to 8 years ago, where we're seeing these big, overbuilt, bulky watches with helium release valves again, which, though cool, I just don't whatever. They're saying, nah, less is more better.
From the press release, to ensure the homogeneity and clarity of the information provided to clients, not customers, clients, Patek Philippe has decided to introduce a new unified standard of water resistance set at 30 meters for all watches certified as water resistant. Having been tested in air and underwater by immersion and an overpressure of 3 bars, corresponding to a depth of 30 meters. This measure makes it possible to guarantee the same performance level across all models concerned and to provide perfectly comprehensible information as to the day-to-day activities in which clients can engage while wearing their watch, washing their hands, showering, bathing, swimming, and other aquatic activities, including diving to depth of 30 meters, which corresponds in large measure to actual utilization. So, you know, I think a few things are going on here. One, I think Patek is body checking a little bit. I think there is an element of we're doing this because we can.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine that there is an element of efficiency, right? Mm-hmm. Like, how many people are diving in a Nautilus or an Aquanaut And they're like, nobody actually, and to the extent people are diving in a Nautilus or Aquanaut, they feel confident that the watch is going to do what it's supposed to do in those environments. I wonder about this. I think this may be something that has the possibility of changing the industry, changing the way, you know, if Patek is doing it, we can imagine that other companies are kind of, you know, putting their fingers together in a TP form and waiting to see what happens. It's interesting. It's really, really interesting. To be clear, I don't get... I've read a bit about this now. I didn't get the feeling or the indication that the actual engineering or specifications of these watches is going to change any.
I don't get the sense so either. But why not spec it appropriately?
I think that's the body check part of this. They're like, we don't need to. You know we're good for it.
A meter of water resistance, probably more. I think that's like putting a V6 badge on a truck with a Hemi in it. Like, well, it's bigger than a V6, but it's definitely at least a V6. I think that is wrong. I think if you're putting something out there that can perform to a certain level, put it on there. Don't make people guess. Right? If the Speedmaster was rated to 110 meters, they'd put 110 meters on it. But it's not, so they don't. It's a weird, weird flex. I just think it's a strange thing to do.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, we'll see. We'll have to see what happens. My guess is that this will deter absolutely no one.
Well, the same people are going to keep buying it, right? I was never going to buy one. This affects me none. I just think it's a curious thing to be doing.
You know, I think that the other piece of this, and the piece that is attractive, perhaps to me and theoretically to you, is that they're, you know, Patek Philippe certainly has models that are not water resistant.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think if there's a benefit to this, they're implicitly perhaps giving an additional status to their watches that maybe wouldn't test more than 30 meters, or they wouldn't be inclined to test them at more than 30 meters. They're saying, this is water resistant. Do what you're going to do. These watches are good enough for any shit that you're going to do in the water. Don't sweat it. We don't have a dive watch anyway. Mm-hmm. This is good enough. This is a water resistant watch. We've tested it to 30 meters. Do what you like. Go swimming. Wash your hands, take a shower, eat shit. We don't care. It's good enough. This is water resistant. Don't sweat it. Stop fretting.
30 meters concerns me.
Well, but 30 meters only concerns you because the way we talk about water resistance in watches, which you and I have lamented dozens and dozens of times on this show, is stupid, right? We talk about water resistance in a dumb way. So if I told you, Andrew, this watch is good to 30 meters, 3 bar, don't shower in it. You're like, what the fuck are you talking about? And yet that's what the industry does. That's what we do. I think.
But we see fogging issues and we see moisture and all that shit at 30 meters.
I know. I think that's what Patek is saying. They're saying our shit's good. This is water resistant. Don't fucking worry about it.
Maybe.
I think that's what they're doing. I think that's part of what they're doing. I think the other part of what they're doing is they're just flexing. They're like,
we make the rules.
We don't. Yeah, that's right.
Maybe.
That's right.
I think it's bothersome, and I think water resistance ratings are troublesome in and of themselves, because you can have these 10, 20, 30 meter rated watches that fog and get moisture penetration at in a shower, in a sauna, at the gym.
Which means to me that watch is not actually a 30 meter watch, right?
No, I agree, but we've seen many failures at that 50 meter and under rating.
You and I will likely never be more than 30 meters underwater.
No, if I am, I'm dead.
Right, right.
Like real dead.
So if we can trust Patek Philippe, not that either one of us is trusting them with anything, but if we can trust, they say this is good to 30 meters of water resistance, and that means that's meaningful, I'm there for it.
If it's meaningful. And with them, correct. You know, when we're having a 120 to 30 meter reduction, we can reasonably deduce that it's meaningful. I just think of Hamilton all the time with their fogging issues, and it's like, that's a 50 meter fucking watch. It should be fine.
You still can't buy it at retail, so fuck off.
No, maybe they'll pay my mortgage, though. I could trade them. They pay my mortgage, and I get a watch. Everyone wins.
Hey, German company, Nomos Glashütte. One of the things that sort of slipped by us in Watches and Wonders, and this might have been a late Watches and Wonders release, which is why they, to celebrate Watches and Wonders 2024, they released a Tangente 38, which celebrates 175 years of watchmaking in Glashütte, a 31 iteration limited release, 175 pieces of each of the 31 different iterations of this, of the Tangente 38. And they're all wild, man. They all of the iterations have their own names, like the Sportbund and the Delphin and the Mavelgrün and the Schulhausweiss.
I like the Dunkelbund.
Dunkelbund.
Yeah.
Pompadour. These are the lemon biscuit.
Canary is sort of a bit of a letdown because it's just yellow. But it's spelled with a K and an I, so it's like fancy.
Pop orange?
Or German. I think it's poop orange. Poo orange. They're fun in German.
So 175 pieces of each. You know, I haven't checked stock on these to see what the availability is.
There's damn 70 colors. There's going to be some available.
You know, the Tangente is a really terrific watch. For under $2,000, you get a 38 millimeter watch that's, I believe, 6.8 millimeters. It's a particular looking watch, and I've handled these before. Our good friend Clay Foster, Southpaw STL, had. I'm not sure if he had the 38. Anyway, but it was still a Tangente. These iconic small seconds, and these all have that. It really is just a terrific watch with 30 meters of water resistance, Andrew.
Unacceptable.
and a really lovely movement. So in-house Nomos, I think the DUW4101 is what they call this, which is just a terrific hand-wound movement that has an integrated date ring that sort of sits down into the movement, allowing it to be super duper thin. And giving it that huge date that the Tangente has. These are terrific. They're novelties. They're limited.
When do they become available?
Let's see. I believe they're available now.
I was just on the website and it says join the waiting list. So they might actually all be sold out.
Well, you know, that's too bad. You know, you'll probably be able to get them on the secondary market if you really wanted one, but... Discover now.
I think this is one of their better executions of color. I think they might not be available yet.
Join the waiting list. Find a retail. You know, they made... I don't know, man. I guess it's possible that they're sold out.
That's a lot of watches.
Well, it would be a... It would be pretty cool. Yeah, 31 times 175.
Like 3,700 watches. 3,800 watches.
Anyway, yeah. They're terrific, and I wanted to talk about them because I think...
6,000 watches.
Nomos did a cool thing.
They did a cool thing.
That's all I have to say about
it. Which isn't... And Nomos isn't usually a brand that gets me excited.
Right. Nomos doesn't do all that many cool things.
No, but the Dunkelbund has... has done it. So is the
It's not goat. That they don't do cool things. It's just that they're a pretty reserved brand, I'd say.
Mm-hmm. The Go also. Go Dunkelbund. I might have to buy two. Wear them on each wrist. Go Dunkelbund. Next up for me. I have a fun thing. Bell and Ross has done a thing this past week. The BRO5 Black Ceramic Collection. So, Bell & Ross has done a lot of ceramic work. This is their first BRO5 in ceramic in this material. Comes in two iterations. One with a skeleton dial. The other with a standard black BRO5. Full, normal, attractive dial.
The sunburst or starburst. Sunburst?
Yeah, not starbursts. That's a candy.
Yeah, I like those.
Everyone does. Do you know, they get stale so fast.
Yeah, they do.
And then they turn into like now and laters.
Yep.
Yep. Which, though still good, have some like real dental issues.
Yeah. They stay with you.
Days. Where was I? Oh, yeah. So BRO5 in black ceramic. I don't dig the skeleton. That's the like Bell & Ross is really confusing to me because they do some stuff that I absolutely love and some stuff that I absolutely hate. Hmm. There is no in between. They are either 100% hit for me or like kick it out of bed and have deep regrets. The skeleton is that for me, but the standard dial is... money. And this is the BRO5. This is one of the most comfortable wearing watches I've ever put on. They're sized great. I love these. The price is yet to be announced, but it's just a BRO5 in black ceramic.
I think prices on this are out. So
the one I'm looking at says to be confirmed.
Three models, the standard black ceramic with the sunburst dial 7500, the BRO5 skeleton black ceramic at 9700, and the 500-piece LE skeleton black loom ceramic with the smoked sapphire dial is 9400. The LE has no polish on it. It's all blasted, which is kind of terrific. And it has black loom. So it's really murdered out.
These aren't, they're not that much more than the standard steel.
Nope.
It's 1,000 for in ceramic.
That's right.
Oh, they are on the website. They're live. I like this. I could get down with this.
You know, I don't know all that much about ceramic cases. It's something that is interesting to me, but again, I just don't know that much about it. These are pretty terrific, and the BRO5 I think is a very, very underrated watch at its price. Bell & Ross has some weird shit, like you said. The BRO5 I think is pretty straightforward. It's like nothing else that exists in watches.
But it's still familiar.
Dimensions are terrific. I think it's at
41.
I think the regular BRO5 is 40 by 10.5 thick. This is a little bigger. I think that's probably a byproduct of being made from ceramic at 41. and 11.2, which is still just absolutely terrific for a watch that has way more water resistance than any Patek that's made today.
100 meters.
70 more.
Oh, I don't know. That was a guess.
70 more meters of water resistance than any Patek on the market.
The standard case is 40 millimeters in steel.
Yeah, 40
the GMT's
millimeters.
41
by 10.5.
Yeah,
but in the standard. So yeah, these are terrific. I think and they're not that much. Like you said, they're not that much more expensive than a steel
steel case, black dial, $5,100. Ceramic case, black dial, 75. So, you know, $2,500, which is not insignificant.
Yeah, no, that's real money.
But when we're talking about the difference between $5,000 and $7,000 for, I mean, that steel case is, I want one.
It's like 38% more. It's a lot of money.
Ceramic.
Yeah, these are really cool. I agree. I had this on my list of things to talk about today too, Andrew.
Yep, and I got to it first. Gotcha, bitch.
Oh, we got another release from Citizen. We've talked a lot about how much killing it Citizen has done, and they're still doing it. They're still doing it. So we're calling these Super Titanium Small Seconds NJ0180. It's the NJ0180 series. Just rolls.
Yeah.
Just rolls.
They could do a little bit better with their naming conventions, I think.
I feel like sometimes it's great, and other times it's like, well, like we need to come up with a name for this thing because
just alphanumerics, it's fine. 84 right. Character long.
You know, they had their Suyosa collection, and then they had more recently their drop, the was it Super 8?
Mm-hmm.
Is it Super 8?
That's a motel.
Yeah, that is a motel. In any event, these are watches that I think kind of fit right in between those releases, certainly in terms of price, but I also think in terms of what you're getting. So these are what they are, is titanium, super titanium, which means Duratec coated or protected titanium.
It's not grade 2-3, nor is it grade 5.
Giving it really superior hardness. Citizen, I learned in reading about this watch, Citizen is sort of the pioneer in watches of commercially available titanium watches. I guess it sounds to me like there was maybe just a little bit of an arms race between Omega and Citizen back in the 70s. And Citizen won that war. So Citizen and titanium kind of inextricably linked. These feel a lot to me like the Suyosa, which is to say it's an integrated sport watch. We've got a 430 small seconds on these and a really beautiful textured dial. Coming in right at 11 millimeters thick. Really nifty sort of 70s, 80s styling. I feel like these are more 70s than 80, or more 80s than 70s, excuse me. They feel more modern to me than the PRX or the Q-Time X. Still kind of an undersized crown, which I wish these companies would just, let's do it, but let's make it modern. 100 meters of water resistance, sapphire crystal, beautiful dials on both of these. We've got a blue and a silver, like sort of a teal, like kind of a light teal.
Kind of a sea foamy.
Yeah.
Minty, not like peppermint, ice cream kind of green.
Yeah, that's right. Caliber 8213, which is a fine movement. It seems to fit the watch. They're under $500.
That's the one that gets me. Like, I'm I can overlook a 430 small seconds for an all titanium decent enough movement for under $500.
I don't even mind this. I don't even mind the small seconds. I think it looks great here. I think the execution's really good.
I don't like that. What's the word I'm looking for?
Asymmetry
of a offset small seconds hand or small seconds subdial.
So right, these fit really kind of right in between the Series 8 and the Tsuyosa.
Series 8, yeah.
You're getting, it just was there. It was just accessible to me at that moment. You're getting just a little bit more refinement over the Tsuyosa without the sort of higher price point. Kind of the case and the bracelet and everything sort of fits right in between those two. It's got elements of both, which is not to say it's aping either. Beautiful dial, great markers, great handsets. These are terrific. Four colors available now. You got white, sort of a navy, dark jade green, and a lighter seafoamy green. Terrific
kind of,
watches.
Kind of is like Tiffany in some color, some photographs. I think that'd be an interesting one to see in person. This is, yeah, definitely a banger from Citizen.
In-house movement. Bears mentioning.
Shocking. Santos de Cartier. Cartier is like dropping some shit right now. We have a dual time now in the Santos de Cartier. The Santos de Cartier being from the 2008 family, so it's a little bit beefier. It's not quite as slim as the traditional Santos. We now have a dual time in the way. The way your headphones caught your ear. You just got a little pompadour look going on right now. A 6 o'clock 24-hour subdial to dual time the original custom pilot's watch. It's kind of surprising that this is new. It sort of seems like something that should have always existed. It's a great execution. I love the it looks like it ought to be small seconds when in fact it is the second. It's your GMT hand in a 6 o'clock subdial. Colors on it are adequate. I don't know. It's a gray sunray brushed dial. I don't know. I could go for a little bit different colorway on it, but 3 o'clock date, which I'm not super fond of. I think on this and I get why you have one. I don't like date windows on the Santos, but everything else about it, I really dig. This is a great execution of what looks like it ought to be small seconds. $8,800 on these. 40.2 wide, 47 lug to lug, 10.1 thick on this. So coming in razor thin for a dual time. 100 meters of water resistance. That's important.
Way more than paddock, than any paddock that's being made
today. Way more. I don't get mine wet. I bang it into shit though. I like this release. I could go for it in like a true black rather than this kind of charcoal-y gray.
Yeah, no, I think it's terrific. I don't mind the colors at all. It's got that monotone thing that seems to be the du jour right now. It's interesting because I didn't notice it until you mentioned it. That date window, I think, is really inoffensive in and of itself. But Cartier, for those of you who've never seen a Santos, will know they eschew the IV Roman numerals in favor of four I's. At the 4 o'clock position, and which I always thought was kind of clever. For whatever reason, in this iteration, it bugs me a little bit because you get rid of the three, and that sort of adds some, for me, at least at first glance, adds some confusion to the four, which is not to say I don't know where the 3 o'clock and the 4 o'clock is. I always think that's stupid. It's not a real legibility concern.
Well, but I can't read Roman numerals, so
I thought, well, that's interesting. I don't actually mind that date window at all, but
I really love the font at the on the dual time arc of the dual time.
I don't like it. It's the one thing about this watch that I don't love.
I love the font.
That dual times in particular, that font, that serif font is not my favorite part about this watch. In fact, it's my least favorite part about this watch.
Well, you can go fuck yourself. Yeah, I super like this release.
How much is this? Because I agree with you that this is a really
$8,800. And you think the Santos is 7.2 right now? I think 7.1, 7.2, and in that family, you know, we've just seen the reverse time, which was just another a real missed opportunity for a crown left. We've seen lacquer dials. This is kind of that's consistent with kind of where I'd expect it to be.
Yeah, no, I don't hate that price at all. I think that's fine. I love it. Cool watch. Andrew, I'm out of things. I don't know if you have any. I know you had a couple more links that you had floated.
I think we can do without them. I'm just going to quickly mention we have a Omega Chronoscope models in moonshine gold and steel in honor of the 100 days to the Paris Olympics.
What do you think of these Chronoscope Seamasters?
They are beautiful. Absolutely gorgeous. This is the first time I've looked at like a gilted dial and been like, okay. I'm here for it. And in steel, 95 on a strap, 98 on a bracelet. Get in on a bracelet. It's $300 when you're spending $10,000. This is, it's like Navitimer beautiful. It's like a super busy, way too much going on, but done really elegantly. And it's like looking at like old star charts that are like, you just can't comprehend it, but it's just lovely to look at. That's kind of how I'm feeling. The gold versions are 32,000 on a strap, 51 on a bracelet. So you know that bitch is gold. That one I'm not as into. Gold watches typically don't do it for me, but this in the steel with the gold markers, the gold hands is just gorgeous. That really rich silver dial, man, I like these. And independent of the Paris Olympics, got telemeter, pulsometer. It's gorgeous.
You know, I asked you what you thought of these Chronoscope Speedmasters because I obviously have some feelings about them. I think that these are, I agree with you 100% that these are super attractive, lovely watches. With that said, I think that there's something amiss for me with this dial. I wish this was in a different case. The Speedmaster has such a masculine and sort of, I wouldn't call it bulbous, but anybody who's handled a Speedmaster will know what I mean. It's really like
phallic.
The case is concave at, convex at every possible angle, or at least it feels that way. I think this dial is so elegant and the line weights are so thin that there's a mismatch between the case and the dial. I wish that this was in a slightly different case, this Chronoscope Speedmasters. I wish that they were doing something to address that as opposed to just stuffing this beautiful dial and bezel into the big Speedmaster case. I think there's a mismatch there. I agree with you that the stainless is better than the gold. I hate the case back on these. It feels like
It's a novelty watch, right? It's Paris 2024 with the Olympic flame.
Do something better. This to me feels like 2017 micro brand case back, and I fucking hate it.
Yeah, a little bit. Only 50 meters of water resistance. Fucking shit.
It was still 20 more than any Patek being made today.
the way the meter lines run through the subdials.
Yeah, they change colors.
They change color. It adds this. Yeah, this is gorgeous. That's why I wanted to talk about it.
I do think that I agree with you, Andrew. The dial on these is gorgeous. The handset's gorgeous. The markers are gorgeous. I just think it's a mismatch. I think that case doesn't actually work.
Yeah, what do you put it in though? You don't put it in the Seamaster. You don't put it like.
Hear me out. Make a case for these. Make a Speedmaster case for these that has a little bit of concavity, that is more elegant, that has a little bit more sort of in to out line that gives a little bit of elegance. That Speedmaster case is so like, and it's made to be heavily durable. This watch needs a little bit of elegance, and or this dial needs a little bit of elegance in the case that I think isn't there. Nobody asked my opinion. I'm just, except for these people listening.
Did you ask? Did you mention it in the board meeting?
I did. They called security. I am not fast, so.
So you left quick. That's the last thing I wanted to talk about. I think it's a really, really lovely release. And honestly, at 10 grand, that's like, I don't know. That's a thinkable acquisition.
I've got the Hodinkee article on these up, and it's the very first comment. It's, who would buy a silver-colored Olympic watch? Just saying.
That's funny. It's got gold on the dial, man.
Andrew, other things, what do you got?
Ooh, I have another thing. And this is kind of an interesting other thing. I got this thing at work because I work from a laptop a lot. And I got, from my work, I didn't buy it myself, a portable monitor. Have you seen this?
Tell me more.
So it is basically a tablet, right? Mine's I don't remember the brand, but it's about a 16-inch monitor that is USB powered, that when I'm working, and it's as thin as an iPad, and it folds up. It has the same little magnetic triangular mounting thing. It's USB powered. You plug it into your laptop, into one of your USB ports, and it is a second monitor. It weighs next to nothing. The actual display on it is terrific. And they're super affordable. They're like between $100 and $200. So I don't remember the brand it was, but I was using it today because I wasn't working in my office. I was working at a different location, and I needed another screen because I was doing some shit. And I plugged in my USB portable monitor and had a monitor bigger than my laptop monitor side by side, dual monitor everywhere I go, weighs nothing, takes up no space in my bag. It is dope. So if you're somebody who works on the go, they also pitch these for like gaming, you know, plug your phone into it and then game on your portable monitor. They're terrific and they're super affordable.
Is it touchscreen?
Mine is not, but
it could be theoretically.
So I'm gonna link a Popular Mechanics with the 7 best portable monitors for smartphones, laptops, and dual screen gaming to it, because this is something that I never thought that I needed. My boss was like, hey, I'm gonna get you one of these. And I laughed at her and I was like, are you stupid? Why would I want one of those? She's like, just trust me. Oh, fucking not my money, sort of. I pay taxes, but that's about the extent of it. comes the mail, I get it, I'm making fun of it. I throw it in my bag and I'm in a class and I'm like, oh, I want, let's see how this goes. And I was like, oh.
That's brilliant.
How about that? Because I work, you know, when I'm at my desk with 2 monitors.
Yeah.
Everyone does that nowadays.
Yeah.
At home, I use two monitors. I just keep my laptop open. And now it can go everywhere with me. I wish I should have brought it home today, but I left it at my desk.
You know, I use Sidecar with my, I'm a Mac guy, so I use Sidecar with my iPad, but an iPad is a lot more expensive than than a $150 or $200 monitor, obviously. But it is a terrific functionality, especially if you're working purely on your laptop, you get that extra space. But working anytime I'm doing graphic design stuff, so if I'm working in Affinity or if I'm working in a Lightroom or Photoshop, Sidecar actually oftentimes will give you, instead of using it as an additional workspace or additional like display, it will give you a set of controls. So I can actually do things on it, and it's terrific. I don't use it enough to have really realized the full power of it, but having, especially when you're working on a smaller laptop, is brilliant. Yeah.
Yeah. That second screen functionality is terrific, and it's bigger than my regular screen, and the picture is just as good, if not better, than my laptop. And yeah, I was really shocked, to the extent that I will probably buy one for myself, because they're not expensive.
Yeah. That's terrific.
Yeah. It's my other thing.
Andrew, is it okay if I recycle one of your other things?
No.
I'm going to do it anyway.
Okay.
I started a series with Kim a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago. And we've watched, I think, 7 or 8 episodes now. Maybe not even quite that many. But this is one of those things.
You're not like, watching enough television.
You had recommended this several weeks ago, but you watch kind of stupid stuff sometimes. So
definitely,
I heard what you said, and I was like, "Oh, that kind of sounds interesting. More interesting than many of the things Andrew recommends."
Most certainly.
And then like 6 people recommended this to me, like over the course of about 3 or 4 weeks. And so I was telling Kim, I was like, "Hey, we got to watch this," and she's like, "It doesn't sound interesting to me, but sure, whatever." And so finally one night she was like, "What are we watching?" I was like, "I think we're kind of like caught up on everything. Why don't we try that?" And she's like, "Oh, okay, let's watch a trailer." The show is Shogun.
Mm-hmm.
It is on, we're watching it on Hulu.
I think that's where I watched it too.
This is set in what? The
feudal Japan.
Yeah, what is this? 15th, 16th century? Or is it? It's more recent than that.
I don't know. Hang on, I'm looking. Premise.
So the basic premise of the show.
1600s.
Okay, so yeah. 17th century. Premise of the show is this. So we're in sort of. Jesus, Andrew.
I don't think I could have made more noise.
Sorry about your ears. This Protestant Spanish seafarer, they call him a pirate. It's unclear, really. But basically an anti-Portuguese sailor. It gets marooned in Japan with a boat.
Sort of on purpose, but also a little bit not.
Yeah, that's right. Gets marooned in Japan with a boat full of guns and gets sort of unwittingly sucked into this Japanese power struggle. Meanwhile, there's Portuguese Catholics that are sort of have stepped into Japan and have like found places of power given the Japanese lack of knowledge about what's going on in the world.
And the trade that they could offer, like there were a whole lot of geopolitics going on.
It's really, really good. The acting is good. The characters are good and fun. Some of it's a little silly, and some of it's a little like, meh. But they
got to keep the story moving.
It keeps you there, right? It is so good. I think we're, you know, like I said, between 5 and 7 episodes in, something like that, and it's like, golly, this is good. I understand this is based in a book. I don't know anything about the author or the novel. I think maybe even a number of novels. I know nothing about them. I do feel like I need to read them because it's so good. It's a little soapy.
Yeah, a touch.
It's got a little bit of soap.
1975 novel adapted into a 1980 miniseries, now remade Hulu and FX. And as I've said before, I think FX is second only to HBO in original programming.
Yeah, it seems like at least in the last 10 years, that's a fair assessment. So anyway, really terrific. I think Apple is
they're closing in. Their selection's limited though. They've got, you know, 4, 5, 6 true original series.
Kind of new to the game. So time will tell. Their quality is, you know, quality over quantity. I feel like Apple is kind of where HBO was maybe a dozen years ago, right? There's not many, but they're all bangers.
Yeah, they're all definitely bangers. And they're starting in the modern era, right? They're not doing that trial and error that HBO did of, you know, the weird premium television softcore porn programming. They're jumping right in. And the way Netflix did. I mean, Netflix, their original programming right from the get was phenomenal because they were able to learn from HBO and all these other cable.
You know, they all better watch out. There's a new player in the game. I heard Truth Social is launching streaming. So everybody.
I cannot wait for that.
Andrew, is there anything you want to add before we get going for the day?
You know, I'm going to go get a Truth Social subscription. That's it. Not really. Probably won't do that.
Hey, thanks everyone for joining us for this episode of 40 and 20, the Watch Clicker podcast. Do me a favor, go to our website. It's watchclicker.com. That's where we post every single episode of this podcast, but also articles and reviews. Things about the British Watchmakers Fair. Check it out, watchclicker.com. If you want to see us on social media, you can do that on Instagram at watchclicker or at 40and20_watchclicker. If you want to support us, and oh boy, we hope you do, you can do that at patreon.com/40and20. That's where we get all the funds that we need to keep this thing going for hosting and hardware and software. All of you guys supporting us, we thank you so much. Check it out, patreon.com/40and20. And don't forget to tune back in next Thursday for another hour of watches, food, drinks, life, and other things we like.
Bye-bye.